Our reading today is from Luke 10, verses 25 to 37. An expert on the law stood up to put Jesus to the test and said, "Teacher, what must I do to inherit everlasting life?" Jesus answered, "What is written in the law? How do you read it?" The expert on the law replied, "You must love the Most High God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." Jesus said, "You have answered correctly. Do this, and you'll live." But the expert on the law, seeking self-justification, pressed Jesus further, "And just who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, "There was a traveler going down from Jerusalem to Jericho who fell prey to robbers. The traveler was beaten, stripped naked, and left half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road. The priest saw the traveler lying beside the road, but passed by on the other side. Likewise, there was a Levite who came the same way. This one, too, saw the afflicted traveler and passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, who was taking the same road, also came upon the traveler and, filled with compassion, approached the traveler and dressed the wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then the Samaritan put the wounded person on a donkey, went straight to an inn, and there took care of the injured one. The next day the Samaritan took out 2 silver pieces and gave them to the innkeeper with the request, 'Look after this person, and if there is any further expense, I will pay you on the way back.' Which one of these 3, in your opinion, was the neighbor to the traveler who fell in with the robbers?" The answer came, "The one who showed compassion." Jesus replied, "Then go and do the same." A word from our Holy Scriptures.
Several years ago, I was in San Francisco with a couple of friends. We had just driven down to Los Angeles for a women's Christian conference, and we were on our way back and stopped in San Francisco for a couple of days. And on this particular evening, we decided to walk up the hill. You can only walk up or down in San Francisco. We decided to walk up the hill to Grace Cathedral, which is a large Episcopal cathedral, Anglican here, but Episcopal cathedral in the heart of San Francisco. And they have there a large labyrinth, because Grace Cathedral is the, they instituted the modern labyrinth movement in North America. So I wanted to go and walk this labyrinth this evening, because I find it to be a very calming and spiritual experience to walk a labyrinth. But on the way to the up the hill to the cathedral, we passed a homeless man who looked considerably bedraggled. Now, if you know anything about San Francisco, you know that this is a fairly common sight. At least it was then. I don't know now. This was several years ago. But there was a disproportionate number of homeless folk in San Francisco because of the temperate climate and the culture and the resources you could find there. It wasn't uncommon to see people all the time under bridges, in parks, and in doorways, sleeping or squatting in cardboard box temporary shelters. It was pretty common then. So when you see them often, you can get pretty immune to their pleas for money or food or assistance. And this man was no different. As we passed by, he asked if we had some spare money for food. You probably get where this is going. As we passed this fellow, I, a pastor at the time in a downtown Calgary church, was inclined to pass him by in order to get to the church. And the irony of the situation does not escape me. But my friend, my dear, compassionate friend, couldn't pass him by. She dug around in her backpack and triumphantly pulled out an apple and a drinking box that that she had had from her lunch and passed it to the man who was dressed in a bundle of rags by the street that evening. And what passed between those two, I will never know, but it was almost as if two angels connected that evening, because he offered her incredible gratitude and this beatific smile for offering him a drink box and an apple. And she caught his eye and smiled back. She was as light as a feather as we walked towards Grace Cathedral. I, on the other hand, didn't feel that great. Who is the neighbor? Jesus asked the man of law. The one who showed compassion, he said. And that wasn't me. I was the priest or the Levite, the one inclined to move over and pass on the other side. When the law expert asked Jesus who his neighbor was, it seems he was expecting Jesus, who was a Jew, to explain that a neighbor is someone you actually know and are expected to care for. He was, it seems, attempting to justify his own behavior in being selective in who he should associate with. Instead, Jesus, as he frequently did, challenged the man to think about his prejudices by telling him a very scandalous story. Because it is a Samaritan, one of the people that the Jews reviled, who was the neighbor, because he had shown compassion. Pretty easy to figure out the moral of this story. It's clearly laid out for us at the end. Being a neighbor has nothing to do with who lives beside you, with who's in proximity to you, or who you know. A neighbor is anyone who shows compassion in times of need. Now, the priest and the Levite weren't horrible people by any means. They were just people intent on doing what they wanted to do, on getting their own needs met, following the letter of the law, caring for their own safety. But they missed out on the opportunity for life, and they didn't even know it. Because everlasting life. Jesus said, do this and you will have life. Everlasting life is about living life fully now, in the here and now. It's that deep down sense that life can be rich and joyful and exciting. Everlasting life takes us out of our small selves and into the God realm of expansive and big heart living. If you want everlasting life, he said to the lawyer, you have to show compassion. And the word compassion itself means to suffer with or co-suffering. In order to have compassion, we have to experience the suffering of others and determine to do something about that suffering. Now, I thought about this week and I thought, that's all well and good in Jesus' time, when you might only encounter a few hundred people in your lifetime. You know all the people in your community well, their struggles and pain, and you participate in community with them. And when somebody was struggling or suffering, the whole community came together to meet the needs of the one who suffered, knowing that when you were in need, people are going to be there to suffer with you as well and to help you in your need. But what about today? We see and engage with so many people we will never even know the names of, let alone what their life circumstances are. Every time we watch or read the news, we are accosted with the horror and pain of great loss or devastation or even evil. We struggle these days in our world with the intractability of the problems of the world, the brokenness of the world, and we struggle with so many people out there who need help. We are suffering from compassion fatigue, and it makes us tempted to withdraw into our own little worlds in order to protect ourselves and the small circle of people that we care for, and let somebody else look after the world. Yet our story today of the Good Samaritan reminds us that we can't do that. The neighbor is one who shows compassion whenever someone is suffering. And when the expert of the law begrudgingly acknowledged that this was the measure of a neighbor, Jesus then said, "You're absolutely right. Now go and do it. Go into the world and show compassion." And how do we do that? Where do we start? We're becoming paralyzed by the extent of the problems and the pain in the world. Every news cycle, it seems, there is something that we could contribute to or try to do something about. Even in our bulletin, there's something about Hurricane Dorian, how we can contribute to that. And our hearts break for the people who have lost homes and families who have lost loved ones. But the stories change so rapidly. Before we can even begin to think about doing something about one thing, there's something else to think about. And it's not that we're less concerned or that we care less. It's just that there is so much. Our capacity to care about things is so divided because we hear so much that we can't focus on anything. And it's not that there are more atrocities than before. It's simply easier than ever to hear about them every single day. I don't know if you've noticed, but when something becomes a current hot topic, like a natural disaster, an epidemic, a war, a local tragedy, or an act of violence, it receives an enormous amount of public concern, and it can drive some good action temporarily until the next big thing comes along and our attention moves to something else. Now, in those few moments that you hear about that one thing, millions of people are genuinely moved by it. We will talk about it, maybe put something about it on our social media feeds, maybe even make a little donation or put in a little time to volunteer here and there. But then we go on with our lives or on to the next issue or scandal. And what else can we do? Nearly everyone lives in a perpetual bombardment of alarming situations. And this news overload erodes our ability to invest significantly in one particular cause or issue. Our emotional energy is always drawn to the newest or latest calamity, and the public spotlight moves on to something else. The news is kind of making us ADD. There will be a few people in the world who will organize their lives around a particular cause or issue, and they will devote themselves to making a difference in one area with their lives. What do we do? So I'm going to make a suggestion today. You might have another idea. What I'm going to say, though, is care deeply about one thing and make it your goal to do something about it. Invest your resources and time in that one thing that you are really deeply invested in and you want to make a difference in. And here's why, and I'm going to give you an example of why this might work better. Let's say we have a town of 20,000 people that are dealing with several concerns in the town. Let's say affordable housing, food security, water resources, increasing amounts of drug use, and growing waste problems. Five major issues that a particular town is dealing with. Now, it could be dealt with in several ways, but let's say that everybody in the town is quite concerned about these things going in their town, on in their town, because they want to make a better community. So they read about them in the paper, they talk a lot about them, they do a few things to help the cause, or they give a little bit of money to help alleviate some of them, and then all these 20,000 people think they've done something and they go about their business. Let's say they put in 6 hours a year to help with this particular cause, and they give an average of $20 to each cause. That's $100 per person to each of five causes, hoping to make a difference. That's 120,000 hours of time put in by citizens and $2 million that's dispersed amongst all the people, all the causes, but not a whole lot of investment in any one of them. But what if a smaller group of people, say one-fifth of those people, 4,000 people, align themselves with only one cause and worked solely on that one cause and gave their resources only to that one cause, a smaller group of people? That would mean that 24,000 hours would go into that work by that group, that one cause, and $400,000 if you gave all your $100 to that one cause. Smaller group of people, way more hours by one group of people, and way more money in that pot for that one cause. Smaller groups of people working on different causes. Change and workable solutions to the problems in our world often only happen when a small group of people decide to do something to concentrate their energy, effort, and lives on one particular cause for a longer period of time. Part of what the problem is today is that our attention is divided and it's contributing to some of the problems. It's better to have more people caring more deeply over longer periods than many people caring for a very short time, as we are inclined to do these days. Care deeply for one thing rather than passionately about a lot of things. We may have more change and solutions to our problems, less compassion fatigue, and more fulfillment when we gain some measure of success in one area. Because inevitably, caring deeply for one thing requires us to evaluate our lives and our lifestyles potentially. Maybe we devote more money or time over a longer period of time to one issue. Maybe we will choose to live differently as a result of what we're choosing to do. And maybe we'll be inspired to learn more about something to determine what we can do. Go deeper rather than wider. And what I'm not saying, though, is to stop caring about everything else. There will always be needs that can be met immediately, and we should do that. But trying to care about everything and fix everything is a recipe for burnout and hopelessness. We can't keep doing it. By the way, the church needs to do this too. We can get distracted by too many things. The measure of a church is not how many people come on Sundays, or how nice a building we have, or how many staff we have, or programs we have. The measure of a church is its capacity to show compassion to the world. How can we focus our energies on a few things we can do something about as a community? Because each local of community of faith has limited energy and resources. Yet if we get focused, we can do something to bring about change in the community and in the world. We can make a difference. Who is the neighbor? It's the one who is compassionate enough to do something, not talk about it, not throw money about it, and not feel bad, but to do something about it. We have been given an incredible gift, the gift of life, the gift of this community, the gift of inspiration. And it's wonderful that we have this strong capacity to show compassion. So let's use it to concentrate our energy into causes where we truly can make a difference, each one of us and as a community of faith. We'd be living everlasting life. We'd be alive. And we could do a lot more good. I want to close with the words of another very wise teacher, Dr. Seuss. Unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing is going to get better. It's not. We're going to take some time.